Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Keep fussing, Amazon. What you gonna tell people to do? You gonna tell people to take their clothes off on these episodes? Is that what you were saying?
First of all.
Uh-huh.
See what happened was because this is hot. And so but and with the shirt and the thing, and he needs to, okay, just do your job, man. Do your job. Let's go.
You know. Welcome to another episode of the Punkdemic Podcast. It's your man, 50 Grand Mike in his hand, MC Johnny T, a.k.a. you know who, Thick Flair, and I'm joined by the hostess with the mostest, the queen of everything, most importantly, the proud CEO and proprietor of everything and anything Punkdemic. We are talking about Amazon, and we're not talking about the shopping experience Amazon unless we're talking about shopping over there at Punkdemic.com. Your number one source for all things Punkdemic. I'll tell you what, if there's anything that we can throw a logo on and try to sell as merchandise, it's probably sitting over there at Punkdemic.com. Hoodies, even though it's not the time of year for them, I would recommend getting one right now because the pricing for them are great because nobody wants to wear a hoodie for the next 3 months. So get them at great prices right now because in 3 months, the prices are going to go up. Get you a hoodie, get you a t-shirt, get you a tank top, get you a temporary tattoo, the Punkdemic logo. Get you some stickers.
We have tattoos?
Why? I don't think so. I don't know, but it just sounded like a good thing to say.
Oh, I was going to say, you throw this merchandise out. You don't run it past me. Am I the boss? I'm the boss. A little bit?
Kind of. I would think that you would appreciate a little proactivity on the part of said employee.
Okay.
Whatever it takes to get people there. Because then the thing is, once they get there and they don't see the tattoo, they're not going to be like, oh, I'm out of here. Well, they're going to look around at everything else and pick something from there.
I think I'm going to get a real one. We'll talk about that.
Oh, my goodness. If you get a real one with the Punkdemic logo on it, that should be one of the places that we broadcast.
When I get my tattoo?
While you get a Punkdemic tattoo.
Okay, I'm down. I'm so down. I have to figure out who I'm going to let do it, though.
All right. We're going to put a call out for tattoo artists in the greater Los Angeles area. And that just might be the thing to do. We're going to table that for right now because, we just don't have anything else to talk about with that until that actually happens. But we're going to figure that part of it out in short order. No question about it. Anyway, make sure you guys go over to Punkdemic.com. Go get you some Punkdemic stuff, as well as all of the previous episodes of our podcast are sitting in the archives on the podcast link. You can also tune in with us on iHeart, Apple, Amazon, Amazon. See how you did that? And Spotify, anywhere else where you consume audio versions of podcasts, and we are a lot of episodes in.
We just put up our 20th episode with Norwood Fisher.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I have to figure this out. They allow me to create seasons.
Really?
Yeah. So you and I have to talk about, okay, which episode are we going to say, okay, we're done with season one. We probably should have called that, like, maybe, you know, after 12 episodes.
Can we cut them in half though now, or we have
to? No, we can't. But you know, we can do better moving forward.
So we can't be like, okay, we did 10 and that's season one. We can't do that.
Not presently, no. But you know what we can do? I think, like, let's pick a cool number, like 21. Episode 21 will be the wrap up for.
Okay.
For season one.
That'd be the next one you put up.
Okay. Then if that's the case, then we're closing out with a bang with today's guest. You know, it might arguably be really one of the best for last. No question about it. And for different reasons. You know what I mean? I subscribe to the musicianship of said individual. You know, I subscribe to the creativity of said guest. That will be said in just a matter of moments. However, you seem to be enamored by this guy's lack of sleeves on his shirt. And as we were recording, going on the air, you were on a rant about just telling anybody they can just take off all their clothes on our episodes and stuff like that. Now, I want everyone to know out there that I prefer to run a ironclad type ship around here.
He's lying.
Okay. I would prefer for things to stay rated PG around here. PG-13 if it absolutely needs to go there.
Only because
But anything about this one here about nudity and all of this, what is happening here?
Let's bring on the girls and see if you're not saying the same thing. Yeah.
No, this is not about what the girls are saying out there worldwide, city to city, ghetto to ghetto worldwide. This is not about that. This is about what you, the role model, the queen of everything. Well, I guess everything might include promiscuous thoughts and we'll innuendo and stuff as well. So she said mostly.
We'll bring on the academic girls and see if you still say that when we bring them.
You know, this is not that. Thick Demic and Punk Demic are not the same thing. You know what I'm saying?
But they are.
Tomato, tomato, potato, potato. Okay. You know, it's getting hot up in here. It's feeling real urban-y. Real toasty.
Oh my.
And that must mean one thing. That means that we have got a little urban heat that's about to slide up in here, as well as the representative of urban heat. And according to Amazon, a man who's too hot to keep a shirt on.
You know what?
Paraphrasing your words, not mine.
I have a boyfriend or something. You might just be getting me in trouble right now. You never know.
Well, you know, you got the gift of gab. I know that you can talk your way out of this one. You know, it's all for the sake of entertainment, boyfriend that might be out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all for the art, you guys. Don't get lost in the sauce. It's all good.
Okay, let's go.
Is it time to bring him in?
Please.
Let me ask him if he's ready to come in. Hey, guest, Urban Heat, thumbs up if you're ready to slide on in the show. Asking you shall receive, ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan from Urban Heat.
What's up, y'all?
See, he's the man in the front. This is the guy
you're talking
to. This is it was in the back. I wouldn't see that the shirt wasn't on so much. You know what I mean? But he's in the front.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was a drummer in a band once and I never wore my shirt. The whole shirt off thing is just, I get hot, you know, I put a lot into it. And so it never started out to be like this, this sort of thing that it, I mean, it's a thing. It's definitely a thing. And it's a balance too. It's a balance because you are, I think we were talking before we hit record, like talking about the, you know, the artfulness of it. And like, there's a moment, you know, and there's moments in the set that are crafted in order to, if it is the moment to take a shirt off because it's hot and because it's also, there's this vulnerability and this power in being vulnerable and all this. And so it's not, we don't play horny music, you know, it's not really like, there's not like a sexy moment where I'm doing that, but I'm also aware of people's reactions and I do play with that and stuff. So I was tempted to have my shirt off by the time I joined y'all.
You know what? I understand that vulnerability firsthand as a recording artist and performer myself. You know, the shirt has had to come off a time or two. You know, it's just an essential part of the presentation. When done tastefully, you know what I'm saying? I couldn't concur or agree any further. No, one professional performing artist to another.
Okay, it's like if you're about to get in a fight, right? And you start taking your rings off and you take your shirt off. It's like you're not doing that because it's you're removing boundaries to the goal. You know what I mean? You're just like, let's get all this off me. Like, let's go. You know? So it's kind of, what's that?
You can fight too.
I mean, I trained during the pandemic because, self-respecting person.
Exactly. I was training to referee those fights as any self-respecting person would be. You know, Jonathan and I have lots in common between our approaches to artistry, physical fitness.
Nobody is asking you to take off your shirt, Johnny Taylor, JT.
You don't understand what happens in my world of social media. They do.
Ooh.
They want to see the essence of true dad bod. They want stretch marks, pal. They want to see the loose skin from the weight that's been lost. They want to guess the ratio of fat to loose skin. They want to see it all. Honestly,
when somebody isn't like, you know, svelte or defined and has, you know, a take the shirt off moment, to me, I feel like it has more power. It's more raw and real because it can't be misconstrued in any way as like, oh, this is a sexy moment. Like, it is a moment of power. And there's something I don't ever, I mean, I like my definition for sure. But sometimes I wish that I could take my shirt off. Not to knock you at all, Amazon. Sometimes I wish I could take my shirt off and not have that kind of attention, though. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Trust me, I get it.
I know. Your notes, right? And you take off yours, and he takes off his, and then of the no.
Ladies, there's a reason why I am EBW champion of the world. There's a reason why when they think of Disneyland and they think of Space Mountain, they say thick flare, baby. Woo! You know what it is. I tell you, they can't keep their hands off of me when this shirt comes off. It's tough. I mean, Jonathan, I have my strategy for how I work through all of that kind of a stuff, all those things like that. How do you handle it? You know, one heartthrob to another.
Honestly, I can barely complain because the objectification that I go through, like whether it's welcome or not, that it is once a night for 45 minutes, right? Whereas like femme presenting and like women have to deal with that constantly, right? So I feel like even like having any sort of like, I've never complained about it on social media or anything. There's one thing, like there was this time in San Francisco where the show was interrupted because people were like yelling, like take it off and stuff like that. And like, I've had like fans post things and I'll repost that because like, I can, if Amazon, if you got to deal with it consistently, like I can deal with it. You know what I mean? Like
if you saw the stuff in my messages,
oh, I can't even imagine.
Why do they call you Amazon? Are you tall? Yes, I am. I love tall women. Do you? Yeah, there was a tree that I saw. What?
That's just disrespectful. What? Comparing you to a tree. Just dude, coming at you. And they're just trying to find some kind of way to break the ice instead of just a Lionel Richie, hello, is it me you're looking for? And that's terrible. You guys are going to have to step that game up a little bit better. Okay?
I'm trying to talk to Jonathan.
I really got to drop a little. Like the next time I'm trying to say hello to somebody, I got to find a GIF of that Lionel Richie, of a clip from that music video. That is a great icebreaker.
Boom. There it is. See, the Punkdemic podcast is educational on so many different levels. This is how you break the ice with people, guys. You never know. Coming with that corny stuff. I like tall girls too. You slide in that DM with a Lionel Richie gif. It's a wrap. You're in.
Get a response from me. I'm not gonna lie, Johnny. Get the hell out! I'm trying to talk to Jonathan. God.
You know what?
We just have so much in common, Johnny.
It's what it is. You know, this is
two sides of the same coin. Yeah, this is just a hang.
Jonathan gets me. You know what I'm saying? This is a great way to wrap up season one. The Punkdemic podcast right now.
Remember, we still have some more to put up, so I don't know what number episode this would be.
Mm-hmm.
It might be like 24 or 20. Okay, goodbye. Go. Get out. Get out.
Hi.
But I'll be back in a little bit.
It's too early. I hate it here. I hate it here so much. Jonathan.
Good morning.
Thank you. I'm wanting to get you on here for a little bit, and I was kind of like waiting for my moment, and I'm pretty good at picking a time to hit somebody up, and I just was like, now, and it worked out, right?
Yeah.
Your shirt aside, I'm just joking.
I know.
When I bring them on, I like to pretend like I don't know who they are or never heard of them in my life so that I can ask you all the regular questions that you get asked, history of your band and where you're from. So let's knock out that kind of stuff so that I can go back to the fact that without your shirt, sir, listen, I'm just teasing you. So tell me about this particular band, Johnny Taylor. Oh, my God. Tell me about the band. Just sit there then. Sit there, but don't talk. I swear to God. Tell me about the history of the band, when you guys got started. Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we met in 2019. Well, no, we met long before that. We had just kind of the Austin music scene at the time was very collaborative, and you sort of, it's a small scene but large, so you're kind of always playing with the same bands and meeting the same, you know, you have the same haunts. And those were a couple of guys that we had been in different bands and was always interested in seeing what we could do together, you know. And so we started doing something together in 2019. I had written some stuff. I had left my previous band after my first daughter was born. I had gotten sober, and I wanted to change, you know, my circles, change everything, you know, that I was doing. And electronic music kind of made sense because it's something I could do in my headphones while my daughter slept. And so I really went into this world, like analog synthesizers and drum machines, and presented this stuff to Kevin. I was going to do a solo thing. And but I didn't like the look of like just one person on stage. And so I was like, yo, like, can you back me up on this? You know, and just like trigger some stuff. And he was like, yeah, like I'll play with you, but only if this is a real thing. This is like an actual thing. Like, I don't want to just like back you up for a show, you know, like, let's make this a band. And I was like, yeah, dope. All right. You have like enough faith in it. Like, let's go. And then Pax was just another, he was like kind of a no-brainer, somebody that I had been wanting to work with, and Kevin been wanting to work with. And so we started this thing, played a couple of shows, and then the world shut down. And I had started working on the record, and I didn't want to have to not work on it just because of quarantine. So I had rented a bunch of gear, and we had quarantined in North Carolina with my wife at the time, with her mother. And I basically brought all the gear to the little apartment above her garage and worked on the first record of Urban Heat songs. That was the first time that I thought that I saw the power of social media and how it could extend the reach of an artist. We had that Gun in Your Hand. We had more people listening to it in Mexico City than in the States. And that was this kind of moment of okay, like, what else can we do? And basically once the pandemic, once restrictions lifted and we were able to start playing out, we just hit the ground running, going really, really hard. And we had a moment, I think in 2022, might be, or 2021, when Have You Ever had been out for, I don't know, we made a video for it, and I think it'd been out for maybe a week or so. And I knew that TikTok was a thing that artists were doing and needed to be a part of our kind of outreach strategy. So I just posted a clip without thinking about it on like a Wednesday night. And the next day, we had gone from like 75 followers on TikTok to 3,000. Oh, and it was like, oh, this is a moment. So I just kept pushing that and started to put some money behind it and just kind of wanted to see how far we could get this thing going. The funny thing with TikTok, though, we got to about 45,000 followers, and that was in 2022, and then literally have just stayed right there because I don't know how to work that platform. So we had this freak thing. Yeah. But it gave us the opportunity to get some more butts in seats, I guess, when we did our first tour. We were already booking that tour. We'd already played our first Austin City Limits. We were building some momentum on our own before that, and TikTok was able to just kind of help with the name recognition and things. But it was really off the hard work, and then all the people from like our first label, Spaceflight Records, and the people who've put faith in and believed in us and saw that we were working hard and thought that we were worth, you know, putting a little bit of investment into. And we switched labels. We switched to Artifact for the second record, The Tower, which came out last year. Did our first European tour last year. Have just been touring kind of nonstop for the last 2 or 3 years, and taking a break this summer to work on a new record. And sort of, we just canceled a European tour. I'm supposed to be in Europe right now. What's that?
Why did you cancel the European tour?
I felt like we could have made it happen. It was going to be really stressful. I had some personal stuff going on, needed to spend more time home with my family, with my daughters. as we're sort of figuring out some personal stuff and some just some really large life changes happening right now, and just kind of needing to focus on that. And then really, I feel like we felt like we had to go back to Europe as soon as possible. But I think we're transitioning into a period of, in the past, it's been say yes to everything. And we're finally at the point where we can actually figure out, like to build, I want to build the kind of life and lifestyle that works for me and my children. And that requires sometimes saying no to things and sometimes having said yes and allowing myself the right to be able to say, like, actually, I don't think that does work for me and we're going to go a different direction and not necessarily commit to something because committing is a huge virtue that, you know, it's like staying true to our word, right? At the same time, I think that being able to recognize when something isn't the right decision and pivot is also very important. And so that's why we canceled Europe. Yeah.
No, it's cool when you get to the point where you realize that you can say no to things. I think when you're a new band or a new something, let's say I just did a podcast or whatever, you kind of have this urgency where you feel like you got to do every show. You got to do every interview. You got to do all the things. And then once you get to a point where you're a little more established, which you guys are, you can pick and choose a little bit more too. So
yeah,
the showing of where you're at as far as a band where you can say, I feel comfortable saying, you know, it doesn't work for us right now. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, cause you also see like how many, and I think it's with anything that you're trying to create, you get to see how much effort something these things take and whether or not the juice was worth the squeeze. You get to see what kind of return did we get, what kind of return on investment. And with art, a lot of it is like you don't really know, right? It's maybe your social media numbers move, maybe your Spotify streams move, maybe your tickets move, maybe they don't, but like the name recognition does. But the, you know, and so at some point you just really have to just like, does this feel right, you know? And my birthday is in a week. I would have been in Paris on my birthday, which sounds lovely, but also like being in Paris on my birthday, broke and worrying about the net, you know, sort of managing ourselves. And I'm looking forward to going back to Europe when we can do it in a way that makes sense. I'm looking forward to getting back on the road when we do it in a way that makes sense. In the past 6 years have taken on the majority of the labor of this project. And I think I had to in order for this to happen. And we're at the point now where if I continue to do that, it's not fulfilling. And so figuring out how to work smarter, not harder, and with the right partners. And yeah.
No, I'm laughing because they say that Geminis are the most creative and the best as far as artists are concerned. I'm a Gemini too.
Woo!
Birthday's in a couple of days. I started laughing. I said, well, that explains a lot. Mine's in June. I'm a June Gemini. We're supposedly.
Yep.
We're wired a little differently.
June what?
Juneteenth.
Okay, word. Yeah, I'm on June 1st.
Juneteenth is my birthday.
Wonderful.
But yeah, okay, so you're in Austin. We had, Johnny, do you remember Bond Breaker? Do you know Bond Breaker from, I think they're from Austin?
Not I don't.
I'm pretty sure it's Austin. It's Austin, right?
It sounds really familiar, though.
I'm going to send their front, they have a front woman. She's so dope. I'll send you some of their, I think they're from Austin.
Oh, yeah, please.
Anyway, we had this big discussion about Texas chili. Like, we went so left on that episode. Austin, the scene in Austin, what's it like?
Yeah. Okay. I get asked this question a lot.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, because like Austin's moniker is like a live music capital of the world. And like, and then like also like people want to know like, yeah, what scenes are like, right? And I'm not excited to answer this because I actually know. I'm excited to answer this because I've realized in the last 3 years of touring the way that we have that I have felt very disconnected from the Austin scene. And so that's recently I'm starting to do, I have a solo project that I'm doing. I have like DJ sets that I'm doing and throwing events in town because we play in town so infrequently. And when I'm home, I'm spending time with my kids. So I'm not necessarily going to shows. So I feel very disconnected from the Austin scene, but this is my summer to really plug back into that, to give back to it and to really kind of be able to answer that question. Not by just bullshitting my way through it. Like, yeah, it's a scene. Like I could bullshit an answer, but to be 100% honest, like I know artists in the scene that I can say that it's deep. The Austin music scene is very deep. There's so much talent that it is depressing that there are so many talented people here. At the same time, it makes it so that if you can rise through the noise in the Austin scene, it means you're pretty dang talented at being able to make a name for yourself because there are so many great bands here. So I think it's a really good sort of proving ground for artists. The scene is eclectic. It is, I would love to say it's supportive, but to be honest, I don't know. I know that it used to be supportive and it was really supportive of us. It definitely is supportive of us at this point, but I think a lot of times when you think about a music scene, the scene in a city, I think about the underground artists. I think about the independent artists. I think about the shows on like a Thursday night where maybe there's like 30 or 40 people. Like those are the experiences that actually make a scene. And if we're looking at it in those terms, then it is really, really solid because any night of the week, you can find shows with passionate, talented artists playing to maybe small, maybe medium-sized, but like passionate crowds that want to support them. The venues are fantastic. The venues have been here for a minute, struggling consistently to get support from the city. There's a tension between what the city thinks is the arts and wants to support and how they want to provide support and who is actually fostering the independent music scene and the way that support that they need. And I think that kind of came to light during the pandemic. And we're still kind of seeing that as far as the way that the city kind of puts aside grant money, but then they have a very opaque process of choosing who gets those grants. I guess I take that a little personally because we applied for this we applied for this grant and it's like we're it's for people who are like showcasing the Austin scene to the rest of the world and all this, and we thought it was like a shoe-in because they were giving so many artists were going to get this grant, and we were like, oh okay, if they're giving away that much money, like we're definitely going to, like, yeah, it's like the city champions us. We got like they named a day last year like Urban Heat Day in Austin, right? You know what? We played at City Hall. We had like this whole proclamation. We're constantly on tour, so like representing the city out. My face was actually used on the Instagram posts for applying for the grant. They were like Austin independent artists. And then it was like with Jonathan Horseman right here. And then we didn't get the grant. I was like, there's a real disconnect here. If you can see that, like, my image is connected enough with artists in Austin, but I think there's like an idea that if you have name recognition, that you don't need the monetary support. And it's like, yo, our overhead is so high. Touring is so expensive. This was such a bad business decision to do as a career. Oh my God. I would do 1,000 different things, but I can't. I mean, what's that?
No, I said, I get what you mean. Cause people know who Punkdemic is. Like, crazy people know who they are. It doesn't mean my merch is flying off the shelves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't, name recognition doesn't always translate to your bank account, right? And your budget.
Yeah.
Right. I get that 100%. What are you working on right now? Because I see you're going to be out here in LA in September. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. I'll be out in LA probably working on the record before then, but we will be there in September playing at the Roxy.
Hint, hint.
Excuse me. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
But what are you working on now as far as something new coming up? You guys are just performing what you already got going on. What are you
I've got a lot of stuff that I'm working on personally. But then as far as the band is concerned, the things that we are working on have not been, they are not public knowledge yet. And so I can't speak to them. But I can say that we are, I feel like we talked about the season of saying yes and then the season of being more, I feel like the season of being more strategic is like Urban Heat 2.0, where with the new partners that we're bringing in and the team is getting larger and things like that. And people with more experience and more just, yeah. So I feel like it's Urban Heat 2.0. And Urban, I can say that Urban Heat 2.0 is going to hopefully, I mean, I think it's going to, at least the fan base that we currently have, it's going to blow everyone away. I think everyone's going to be very, very proud of us. I think we're going to do work that we're proud of. And yeah, yeah, the things that we're working on right now are big.
So tell us that don't know, who makes up Urban Heat? How many of you?
Yeah. So it's myself, Jonathan Horseman. There's Kevin Nakhan, who plays synths and guitar. And then Paxel Foley, he plays bass and synths.
Okay. No, yeah. So I was looking online and you considered Dark Wave.
I don't know.
Older than I look, so I remember when all the waves came in. What's another band or influence you could say you guys would identify with or as?
I try really, really hard to not sound like anybody else, if possible, or like sound and like enough of different people that you can't really put your finger on it. So we're kind of, yeah, the Dark Wave moniker is up there, which so much is thrown in there, because there's Cold Wave, there's post-punk, there's it's kind of like the goth sort of sub-genre has a lot going on. What's that?
Industrial, gothy.
Yeah, I mean,
thing too. I was an industrial fan back in the day. I'm a Trent Reznor girl.
Okay, yeah. I mean, Trent Reznor would be if there was a musician that I, you know, people ask like, who's your inspiration? And I'm like, not necessarily a musical inspiration, but I mean, yes, that too. But Trent is, yeah, one of the people that I absolutely look up to as far as their life story and their talent and their work and their ethos. I think I tell people that we exist at the intersection of synth pop, post punk, and like new wave. Because there's definitely, I think a lot of it has to, I struggle with what the hell we're doing, our music is, because the vocal, you know what I mean? Like my vocal styling is very, it's very distinct. It's doing its thing yeah, there's dark wave things going on to it, but whenever I've heard our music on a playlist with other things that are supposedly in the same genre, it sticks out to me. Not just because it's my own, you know, and I'm fine with that, but it's also algorithmically it makes things more difficult for us, you know.
I'm laughing. Which is, I heard the term shoegaze for the first time a while back.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell is that? Right? Like they have the term for
everything,
right?
You just heard of shoegaze?
Not recently. This is some years ago, but when I did.
Okay, yeah.
I was like, what is that? And they had to tell me it's these bands. I go, oh, well, yeah, of course I know who that is, but I don't know what they called it. You know what I mean?
Because they look down when they're playing, because they're gazing at their shoes.
It's ridiculous.
So everybody, but lots of people play, like, just because you look at your shoes while you're playing doesn't mean that you're playing shoegaze, right? And so it just kind of
on everything. Everything has to have a title of the genre of,
and there's so yeah. Yeah, I mean, it helps with classification, but I do think that we're kind of, because of things needing to be, right, like art is subjective, beauty is subjective. There are these ephemeral, ethereal things that are more about a feeling and a personal relationship with the work, right? Yet we live in a world that is increasingly, and this is not complaining or anything, but we live in a world that is increasingly needing to break things down into ones and zeros in order for it to be cataloged, in order for a lot of it is in order to be able to figure out where to market things. Right. And so I think we run into a problem, right? Where it's like, how do you train? It's similar to the issue of like, how do you train an AI to create an original piece of artwork, right? To create, like, okay, if we weren't giving you any input, what would the AI want to paint without being able to already know what to copy and like all of that, right? Because there's an element to all creative work that is about feeling and is something that can't be quantified. And so we run into this issue of when something doesn't necessarily fit cleanly into certain boxes, it's harder to market it. It's harder to package it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it has any less or more value than the stuff that is easily definable, right? We would probably be a lot more successful at this point as a band if we did kind of pick one lane and stick in there. I know that that's like to the guys' chagrin. I know that my guys wish I would write more vibey music that fit better on the playlists with the others, with the bands that we play with and things. But like, that's just never going to be I'm never going to want to do that. I wish I could. Sometimes I wish I could write like just like really cool songs. Like this is just, it's just a cool song. Like, you know, like people listen to my music like with headphones. People listen to my music alone, right? It's not like they listen to it together at the show or like maybe at a club. There's like a moment a lot of time, but Goodbye Horses, because it's a cover, right? But like our originals, and they're meant for that. Like that's how I interact with music. I don't put music on when I'm cleaning. I don't just listen to music when I'm driving. That's my time to hear what's going on in my head. When I put on music, it's because I'm doing nothing else but listening to that music. And that's the music that I want to make. I want to make music that it itself is the experience. I don't want to make background music or vibe music. And I know that that's what is popular. People want to put on a playlist and not have to think about it. They want background music. I'm not saying everyone, and I'm not complaining about the state of music, because I think that's just putting one foot in the grave. If you start saying that music these days is, well, it's like, dude, don't be so old. Like, yeah, sure, I've been on the planet for X amount of years, but that doesn't mean that, like, it just is what it is. But yeah, some people make music that's vibey and like you're supposed to chill to, and other people make, I think that it's important to have music that you have to pay attention to. Maybe isn't difficult to listen to, but you know.
I was just shaking my head. I'm like, damn, Geminis, why can't we just do what everybody else is doing? Like, we just don't have it in us. There's no
yeah.
way that can do what everyone else is doing. There's just, we can't.
No, and I've tried. It sucks. I don't like, it just, I'm not excited about the music. I could make boring music. I really could. And people would probably like it, but I wouldn't like it.
Exactly. There's something that we can't do it just because the people would like it. We can't be like, well, they would like this. I don't got it in me. I've never been able to be like that. So I get it.
Yeah.
So you're coming to LA. Where else are you going to
yeah.
I think September you're out here.
Yeah, we haven't announced the spots, but we'll be doing we'll be on the West Coast for the month of September.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And it's very possible we'll be on the East Coast for October.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where I saw it. Is it on your page? Probably on your page.
Oh, I think we've only announced the September one. Yeah.
That's the one. That's probably. I was like, where did I see that at? That's a shame.
The LA one, yeah.
But yeah, so new music you can't talk about right now.
I mean, a new record. We're gonna say we're working on a new record.
I wanna derail the train for a minute and go to our conversation before we hit the record button.
Yes. What's that?
What was the nickname? It was what?
Oh, Javelin.
Okay, so that was from a previous band. Tell me about Javelin and how you.
Yeah, well, everybody had really great names. My bandmate in that, his name's Taz. It's Tazlin Muerte. It's a great freaking name, and I'd always complain about, like, you know, I don't have a nickname, and he was like, I got one for you. It's Javelin. And I was like, yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And it's essentially, it's because I'm long and thin and dangerous. And yeah.
Who told you that? You feel that's how you identify, as long and tall and dangerous? Or you just said, that works?
I think it just, yeah. Or just like, oh, Javelin's cool. And then thinking about a javelin. And it's like, yeah. Yeah, that all fits.
That's so funny. How long were you with that other band, your previous?
I think we probably did that around 6 years.
Oh, wow.
Maybe less or more. Yeah, we did some festivals, a couple of tours. There are a lot of lessons, a lot of mistakes made. And I think we've all, a lot of lessons learned, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned sobriety, right? Was I?
Yes.
When did that go on? Like, when did you say, this isn't working for me anymore? Or what was it that?
I think that I had made several attempts to kind of cut back on substances or chill out. But it wasn't until my first daughter was born. And Tuesday was about 8 months. And I knew I never wanted my kids to see me messed up. That was a big one. And my wife at the time, like, it was, you know, she was very clearly communicating that it was a problem. And it's, yeah, I needed to prioritize my relationship with my wife, but my relationship with my child. And I just, yeah, it was a pretty easy decision to make. So I've been in recovery for a little over 6 years now.
Good for you. So I've had this conversation with other musicians. Is it hard to do when you're touring and stuff like that to stay straight and narrowish?
I think the reason it can be hard isn't necessarily because of touring. The reason it can be hard is if you're not in a good place. And I think sometimes tour can make it easy to ignore the parts of yourself that need that attention in order to be in a good place. Having alone time, stress. Touring can be very stressful. In the States, not so bad. In the last time we were in Europe, I did relapse. That's why I say I've been in recovery for 6.5 years, not sober for 6.5 years, because I relapsed maybe 6 weeks into an 8-week tour. And it wasn't a bad relapse. I didn't have a whole crash out like moment. It wasn't even moments of weakness. I consciously made a decision because I was at a point where I was like, F this. I just felt, what's that?
Stress.
Yeah. Yeah. And stress, isolation. I think isolation is the biggest thing. So tour can be extremely isolating. In the past, I've sort of used my social media fan base as like a way to stay less isolated. I'll be very honest about how I'm feeling about things. And even though I'm still feeling isolated because there is that separation and people don't actually know me, just one little comment that might just be the right thing that you need to hear that day, you know what I mean, can get you through it. And I don't know if people realize that they're the ones leaving those comments, because sort of the way that we communicate with other people is kind of, I'm communicating with the universe, with higher self, and it's communicating with me. And so there's a message that, I mean, that's what the music is. It's messages from people's higher selves to themselves. And I just get to be the vehicle for that to get there. And so it's sort of, the comment section is sort of the same thing, if you want to look at it that way. You know, it's like, it's a time for all of that out there, if you believe in that, you know, to kind of like give me what I need to hear in a moment. And you can choose to, you know, I mean, if there's like a hater's comment, you don't have to be like, oh, universe needed me to hear that today, you know. But like, maybe in a way, you know, you needed to practice unattachment, you needed to practice letting shit roll off your back. Like, you know, it's all there for a reason. So it's an interesting social experiment, but it also provides can provide a lot of support when feeling like sobriety and recovery is just too much, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because there's people that never get sober. I don't remember who was I talking to. I think it was it Mike Dean from Corrosion of Conformity. We're talking about, I think they were giving somebody a hard time that was trying not to like to be sober while they were on tour. Was him we were talking about when he was touring with Metallica or something. Anyway, but is there ever a situation where you feel pressed, like they're like, here, you know, have this drink or whatever the thing is?
No, because I've made a point to talk about my sobriety so flipping much and made it like a part of our brand. Like everyone coming in the door, like if it's a headline show, most of the people know that I'm in recovery. At least in the past, you know, like we've had a lot of growth since I kind of stopped being as personal on social media. But, you know, up until about a year ago, everybody, that was like very common knowledge, and I've been talking about it. And part of doing that, again, was in wanting to serve others and provide encouragement for anybody else who was thinking about it. But a lot of it is about forming a community for myself and accountability. If like I can't be fucked up at the merch table or something, if like, you know what I mean, like people are coming up but at the same time, part of that became triggering as well. It's easy, it's hard, it's just, it is what it is, you know. If I want to do this for a living, I have to be sober. I couldn't do this otherwise. Yeah,
the key word was for a living. Like if you're just doing it just to be doing it, there wouldn't be any. Wouldn't have to focus on anything in particular. You could just do whatever.
And I'm building something for my children. I got plans. I got plans for this. And whether it's with Urban Heat or whether it's with something else, like I'm using my talents to make an impact. When I say an impact, I'm thinking like a meteor hitting the earth. Because that's what creativity is. That's the potential that it has if you really truly let it change you and the world around you. And I want that. I'm calling that in, and I want to work with people who want that as well, who believe that that's possible, because believing it is the first step to making it happen. That kind of work, that kind of impact that I want to have, there's no way that that's going to happen without like all hands on deck, meaning like myself being there fully present and working my ever loving little ass off. But work-life balance is something we're working out too. But luckily I'm taking this summer to hang out with my children, and I'm sorry I'm talking so much about myself.
You're being interviewed, you're supposed to talk about yourself.
I know, that's weird though.
I recently got interviewed for a book, and it was so weird. Like I would be mid-sentence and catch myself talking about myself too much and then stop. Yeah. like, that's what you're supposed to do. And I'd be like, oh, true. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there?
Yeah, but I guess there's a difference between like an interview and therapy, right?
Same thing.
Yeah.
In that interview, like that I brought up, I didn't even think I was going to bring up, and it just went into like a whole another thing. That's why I like doing the podcast, because I don't actually sit here with a list of questions. I don't have any. Like if I check out the band, if I don't know the band or the person, and then there's just something that, you know, that stands out that I want to know, then by all means, I might jot it down. But I kind of like it to be more like a conversation between us or whoever it is. No, but I was thinking about what you were just saying about putting out different things and the energy. Is there a particular, and I'm not going to be cheesy, but like the message of all the things, but is there something that you want to convey through your music, like a feeling, an energy? What do you want people to take from it at the end of the day? Like what?
It's kind of a it's a cop out non-answer, because I want to be, I think your work is the most pure when it is not coming from you. Like obviously you are interpreting it through your experiences and through that lens. But I think that the point of the work is to allow interpretation from the listener, from the viewer, to be able to apply that to the lessons that they need, either lessons or the comfort or the kick in the ass, or I want my work to affect people the way that it's supposed to. And I don't always know how that is supposed to be. I remember with the first record, we called it Wellness because it ended up being a lot of it being about mental health. And I would get messages, so many messages from people who had been considering taking their own lives and credited our music in some way with having them either regaining a will to live or changing their mind, and that's something I never wrote songs with the intention of of suicide prevention, right? I don't have a song about that. That was never something before releasing it. That was never in my purview that this could be a possible outcome.
Right.
And yet that's the way that it's affected those people. So that's what I want. I want my music to give people whatever it is that they're supposed to. Like, obviously there are subjects that I'm going to want to think about and sing about and write about. But a lot of times when I sit down to start writing, I don't necessarily have a subject matter. I don't know what something's going to be in the end when I start. And it's made, it's, if I try to do that, it's never felt right to me at all to sit down with any sort of intention. I don't know how fast the song is going to be. I know nothing. I know nothing, but I heard a thing in my head. And so we need to start getting it out and then allowing it to be what it's supposed to be. I'd like people to feel good, I suppose. I don't want anybody to feel worse. And I think, you know,
somebody listens and they're like, I was mad before, but now I'm pissed. Like, no, that's not quite what
I mean. Yeah. Well, the thing is, even with angry music, right? Like I feel better if I'm angry and I listen to angry music, I feel better afterwards. You know, if I'm depressed and I listen to depressing music, I feel better because I have a way to express that. Somebody is giving me an outlet to release those emotions and those feelings. So yeah, I guess release. I want people. Yeah. I don't know. I want it to do what it's supposed to.
I enjoy watching the process of the person trying to answer some of the stuff that I ask them. I really do. I enjoy it. JT. I usually let him come in and ask questions because you know, Johnny Taylor's matter too and all that. JT, you have any questions?
You say his name and he appears. How about that?
I don't know if that's good or bad.
But anyway. Oh, it's a wonderful thing. It's a much needed thing in the world these days.
Oh, yes.
Any yes, questions? It is.
Jonathan?
No, I think you nailed it. I mean, in typical Amazon fashion, coming in, asking the hard questions, asking the easy questions, asking the questions that a listener would really want the answers to upon the introduction. I think you did a magnificent job on this episode.
So my question,
I want you to get these flowers is what I'm basically saying to you.
Thank you.
Despite how meanly you treated me earlier, I have the professionalism to still come back around and acknowledge the greatness.
I like to be consistent. Treat you like that all the time. Let's be clear. That's kind of what happens. I'm sorry.
It is kind of what happens. No, you know, I kind of relate with it. I mean, I never had an issue with sobriety myself, not in terms of substance abuse. But man, these carbs though, man, look, sometimes these snacks be calling a brother, you know, as a man who is in phenomenal, physically fit shape. Would you say that a similar type of energy would have to be flexed for those who are looking to kind of walk away from certain types of snacks? You know, I hate that one of my nicknames is the Snackificent. I always have a snack in my bag no matter where I go. You just never know when you're going to be around someone and they need a snack. You know, my social media, I always tell people, relax, have a snack.
Yeah.
You know, because I think snacks bring people together as well. But man, they don't bring the numbers the right way on the scale together for me. So some people really struggle with the sugar addictions. There's addictive substances and a lot of some of our favorite snack food. Amazon works diligently to stay in to make different types of healthier choices. She chooses lower carbs, which I think there's a role for that. But then, you know, when we fall off that wagon, man, I'm bathing in Cheez-Its. I'm bathing in them.
Okay. I have a response to this.
Let's hear this. We're all ears.
Okay. So I on my personal page, I'm starting to do more fitness advice and things like that, because I get asked a lot on the road and I'm like, I could put something together to help people. And what people have asked me about my diet, about exercise and things. And for me, it's really simple. It's listening to your body, because your body will tell you what it wants. Now, a lot of times when I say that, someone's like, well, my body is telling me it wants these snacks. It wants this sugar, right? What that actually is, right? We get chemicals released in our brain when we have sugar, when we eat for joy, right? So we're not listening to our body because our bodies feel better when we have whole food, when we have like a balanced diet, right? When we have like non-refined sugar, when we have just like fruits, vegetables, like clean meat. That's when, at least if we eat meat, right? That's when our bodies are going to feel the best and in turn will look the best. But our brains, we get addicted to these chemicals that are getting released when we process all this processed food. And it's intentional too, right? If you think about like, we live within a capitalist society, right? Where you're not getting those Cheez-Its for free, right? They've been marketed and sold to you. You're spending money on them. So is it that far-fetched to think that the ways in which those are made would be keeping you craving them, like cigarettes, like anything else? Like, part of the experience is enjoying this chemical release and then being like, yo, I need to get some more of that Diet Coke. I need to get some more of, right? And I think we're listening to our heads and we're not necessarily listening to our bodies. And it's not the easiest thing to do. We have to create that separation a little bit, because there's so much noise from chemicals outside, from also chemical releases, so much noise from marketing, from social media. Like, I think when we can clear some of that noise, get away from the ever-present messaging, the messaging where, like, just you think a billboard's not going to actually affect you, but that it gets in there, man. And so, like, if we can just shut that off for just a little bit, create a little bit of space, just sit with ourselves and be like, what do I really feel like? You know what? A cold Honeycrisp apple right out of the fridge actually sounds really freaking good right now. And just rocking that and seeing how it satiates, you know? And it's easy for me to say because that's the kind of stuff that I surround myself with. I like always have a healthy option. But yo, I get down on some sweets. I get down on some snacks. Like, especially like, yeah. Yeah, it's a constant, but it's not approaching it from a place of a deficit, not beating yourself up because you did want to have something, allowing yourself treats, but letting treats be treats, you know, like, okay, at the end of this day, like rewarding yourself with a treat, so that we can still make it fun and things like that. But that's my thoughts on that.
Great thoughts. You know, I feel like we need to have you back just to talk about that kind of stuff.
Yo, let's go.
Yeah, I really think this would be a great return episode outside of the music stuff. Just it's a thing that even people who are quote unquote healthy, people who are quote unquote in shape, I just think our society, it's just a thing people struggle with. It's finding a balance in some of that kind of a stuff. And our lifestyle, we're on the go and sedentary at the same time. We're in a hurry to rush to go sit down behind a computer in somebody's office.
And like healthy, like stress mm-hmm. makes you put on weight. Not sleeping well enough makes you put on weight. And yet we glorify this hustle culture mm-hmm. of like, you need to be producing constantly, producing. But that actually doesn't benefit you. It just benefits whoever you're producing for.
Yeah.
Right. Because most people don't work for themselves. Most people are working for somebody else. You're just helping the economy kind of go. And I'm not like a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but I do believe that there is an intentional effort over the course of decades to keep the average American unhappy, unhealthy, and it's an industrial sort of thing because we're better little consumers and producers. You know what I mean? There's industries built around our consumption, around us feeling less than. And so we must spend money on these things to make us feel okay, but they will never make us feel okay. And so we keep working so we could spend more money to get these things to make us feel okay, but we won't feel okay. And we just keep,
it's a cycle.
And everybody wonders like, why are we all depressed? Why is everybody over medicating? Why are we drinking too much? It's like, yo, it's not accidental. This was all created to keep us like this. Because there are men and women, mostly men, mostly white men at the top who they're raking it in. I'm so sorry. I did not mean to go down there.
No, you know, you were led to that, by the way. You were given an express pass to that. You know what I'm saying? You know, one, as an entertainer, I know that you understand one of the greatest rules of entertainment is you got to leave people wanting more. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we're going to do. And we're going to stop this episode right here. We're going to leave people wanting just a little bit more because we are now in Punk-Divic overtime. She's got that finger going up. That means one more question.
So what you're saying is the Johnny Taylor Jonathan shirt off is not happening? It's not happening?
Oh, we can believe this summer season. You can believe that, you know. Yeah. As a matter of fact, we'll just do the whole next episode. Neither one of us will just have shirts on in the next episode when we follow up.
I was looking forward to it. I was like hoping. All right, fine. Wrap it up, Johnny.
Well, you know, again, it's leaving people wanting more. You know what I'm saying? It's to be continued. The second part of the episode will air.
If y'all have me back, I will take my shirt off on the next one.
Oh, you heard it. It's going down.
And he's doing it for a purpose, okay?
I know what the purpose is.
The purpose is not your reasons that you have. No, it's not to keep a smile on your face. It's to demonstrate a point.
Okay.
One that was made at the top of the episode. I love it when everything just wraps right back up again. Everything just leads right back to the top. Anyway, right. This has been, I think this has been a really good episode. I appreciate you making the time to rock with us today, Jonathan, sharing about your music, sharing about your journey and some of your creative processes. One thing that's really interesting is, from what I've learned over these 21 episodes, is that no one has one process that they subscribe to, which uniquely makes everyone sound, unique. And I think that that's a good thing. So I appreciate you sharing and allowing us to step through your creative processes a little bit. Also sharing a little bit about your sobriety. And this is going to be a point of connection for somebody out there. I'm already thinking of a couple of people that I'm going to share this episode with who are specifically walking down that path. And so, I appreciate you sharing that without question. So I guess we wrap up right here. We're gonna put a bow on it right here until next time.
Right.
Until next time, you know, we don't have an actual way that we sign off, but we're going to sign off this way. Till next time, be kind to your mind and each other. Boom. There it is. Pow. Kaboom.
You got your sign off.
You can't just say pow and don't turn it off. Like, turn it off. Like, what are you doing? Hit the button.
Man, I'm trying to tell me how to live my life.
That's what I do. It's kind of my thing.